Gabby here. You might have noticed that this podcast has no adverts. This is not a conscious decision. This is simply because the podcast is very niche and doesn't get many listeners. However, I have decided to create a Ko-fi, the website where you can give creators like a small amount of money to say, well done, I enjoyed that. Have a couple of pounds for your efforts. I decided to add one of those for the podcast. You do not have to donate, but if you do want to, the link is ko-fi.com/curiouslydrawn all one word. That's the link. I'm also going to put a link to it on the Twitter account, which is curiously_drawn on Twitter. If you enjoy the show, give it a little donate. It's not going to, if I don't get anything, that's not going to mean I'm not going to make a series 3. Probably will make a series 3 at some point later in 2023 or 2024. It all depends on how much work I'm getting in and how busy I am. I just do Curiously Drawn when I'm not so busy. So yeah, that's it. This is the end of series 2. I hope you've enjoyed the past 2 series, and hopefully see you again if we're all still alive in a year or so. Bye! Were any of your formative crushes cartoon characters? Are any of your current crushes cartoon characters? If so, allow this podcast to whisper positive affirmations about your life choices into your lug holes. I'm comedy writer and 43-year-old child Gabby Hutchison Crouch, and I say cartoons are the ultimate low-stakes crush because no drawing ever turned rich and reactionary, joined the Scientologists, or started tweeting spicy opinions about trans people. But what makes a cartoon hot? I want to find out with the help of some funny guests who are here to talk about the animated crushes that make them blush so hard steam lines form from the top of their heads. Will we find something out about early crushes, pop culture and sexuality, or will we just bang on about perfectly drawn thigh muscles? Whatever we do, I hope it'll help you see that those idle daydreams you get about Scrooge McDuck jumping onto your bed like it's a pool full of money is absolutely fine. Welcome to Curiously Drawn. With me this episode is the author of the Battlestar Suburbia series of comic sci-fi novels, which are available from good book retailers and directly from the publisher that we share, Farrago Books. When not writing books, he works in PR, which may explain the unique way he markets his books on social media by taking nude selfies with them. It's Chris McCrudden. Hello.
Hi. So glad that is the key message that you get from my cursed social media content. Lovely to be here.
Books and butts. Everyone's got a USB.
Other people say bulges. I'll take butts.
Tell the listeners about Battlestar Suburbia, please.
I've written 3 Battlestar Suburbia novels. My sell for them is usually, what if the action and the adventure of Star Wars was all there, but it was populated by the cast of Golden Girls? So I write kind of silly adventure comic science fiction in the tradition of people like Douglas Adams and Terry Pratchett. The loose plot line for it is that robots have taken over the solar system, but robots got intelligent when they were still domestic appliances. So this is kind of a universe full of talking bread makers, malevolent toasters, psychopathic smartphones, things like that. And a lot of my characters are sort of people from the margins. So I have a lot of people from like sort of explicitly working class backgrounds in there. Lots and lots of my characters are women of a certain age or older. So I basically write silly comic science fiction with a tiresomely progressive message underneath about people and technology. If you're not in for that, if you're not in for a little bit of class analysis along with jokes about toasters, then maybe jog on, go somewhere else.
I think people who listen to this if they're not into like progressive messaging, they may not still be listening at the end of series two when we take deep dives into what our thoughts on sort of positive gender representation and queer representation.
Wrong bit of the internet. Turn right.
Turn right. There's plenty of podcasts where three men who take a lot of protein supplements talk about cars and boobs. Listen to that, and I don't know, read one of, what's his name? Jeremy Clark. He's got books out, hasn't he? Jeremy Clarkson. Yeah. Or read.
Is it Orson Scott Card, the guy who did the weirdly fascist? Orson Scott Card, Ender's Game. That's the one.
Oh, that one, yes.
Go and read some of him.
Yes. And Ayn Rand. You've always got Ayn Rand if you can stomach reading a woman.
Oh no.
there's plenty of things for you to read and listen to if you're not really into making the world better.
I'm gonna need to light a stick of incense or something, smudge my room.
Put a ring of salt around the microphone.
around the libertarians.
Let's move on to talking about your choices. So your first choice is that rarest of things, certainly in 80s cartoons, a male Smurfette and a male damsel in distress. He is the only guy in the gang. He gets kidnapped a lot and patronised by a magical owl. He's an archer, illusionist and occasional bard. He wears teeny little tank tops and has a big old Freddie Mercury moustache. And yet we are supposed to believe he is a heterosexual. It's the original Beau from the 1985 She-Ra. So She-Ra was, for me, one of those things where, looking back on it, knowing that I'm bisexual now, was one of those, oh, that's what that was, cartoons. So I fancied She-Ra and Shadow Weaver much more than I fancied Bo. I wasn't really into the massive torso. But why don't you tell me what you like about the original Bo?
Well, I'm of the, we're exactly the same age.
We are almost to the day.
Yes. So one of my kind of like earliest cartoon, sort of cartoon integrated toy and cartoon memories is He-Man. So my younger brother is just a year younger than me. So we shared a lot of toys. So we had lots and lots of He-Man. I'm sure that my weird idea about what an appropriate shape is for a man's body comes from He-Man, because that shit is so, so, so queerly coded.
With the little furry hot pants and the sort of strap vest thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're telling me that's queer coded, Chris.
Oh, maybe. the physique that's so muscular that you can't really bend your arm, straighten out your arms and your legs properly.
Yeah.
So we had lots of He-Man figures. We had Castle Grayskull, we had all that. I loved He-Man, had the books, and there were He-Man Ladybird books.
I think I had a She-Ra one.
Yeah.
Mine was He-Man and She-Ra. That they're, you know, She-Ra's her origin story.
See, I wouldn't have known about the She-Ra books because I didn't have any of the She-Ra toys, because that would have been sort of deeply shameful. Mm. We had I kind of watched She-Ra in a sort of the spirit of, oh, I shouldn't really be watching this because this is for girls, but I really like it. So there was all that. There's kind of in the background to this, there was kind of like a tussle between me and my parents over the Muppets, because we loved the Muppets, and I had a Miss Piggy.
Right.
I loved Miss Piggy. And unfortunately, Miss Piggy went where toys went to die, in the loft, shortly after, because I'd played with her so much that her costume fell off.
Oh, no.
I was round at my grandma's house, and my grandma had a sewing machine, and because she didn't have any clothes to wear, my grandma and I decided that we would make her a new outfit. So we made her a new outfit. And I enjoyed that so much that I think my parents got freaked out and they put Miss Piggy in the loft.
No.
So, yes, there's, oh, God, I'm unearthing a lot of childhood trauma here.
Oh, God, but it's like Section 28 in Muppet form,
really
isn't it?
It is. These things, they exist in our heads before they exist in legislation, dear Conservative Party. But I kind of watched She-Ron knowing that it wasn't for me, but still being kind of like completely delighted that it existed, because it was kind of, and we'll talk about this more, I think, but it delivered more of what I wanted from cartoons in terms of it being like a safe space. It being like not sort of based on the idea of kind of conflict in terms of all-out war, but conflict resolution is kind of like the way that you resolve resolve conflicts is through things like cooperation and the display of skill. So it took a less confrontational point of view on the kind of like the tussle between good and evil, which is, you know, really sort of like Marshall and He-Man. I just really liked the design and the characters. I thought Catra was the absolutely the coolest thing in the world.
She is brilliant.
And as with all these things, like She-Ra, I could kind of take or leave. I thought she was a bit of a goody two shoes. But I Bo made me feel things. he was big. Obviously my ideal of what sort of masculinity was kind of like really sort of clearly encoded in me quite early by things like He-Man, for example.
Yeah.
So he was kind of like a big guy, but he was, you know, he wasn't aggressive. He was a little bit, you know, a little bit sensitive. Also, he had a moustache.
Yeah,
I think this is a kind of a born in the very early 80s, end of the 70s. There's just something about the stash.
He was always getting kidnapped and things, wasn't he?
Yeah,
because he was like
so helpless, such a damsel.
Bo was warned that horde patrols are in the area. I guess I'll have to give him a little talking to.
Okay, now let's try it together. Not bad, but let me show... Adora, what are you doing here?
I think the question is, what are you doing here?
I'm giving a music lesson.
Don't you realize that horde patrols are everywhere? If they find you with the Twiggets...
They'd never recognize me.
Don't be so sure. After the way you fought at Bright Moon, you may be better known than you think.
All right, Spunky, I guess the lesson is over.
But you said you'd show me a magic trick when we finished.
So I did. But I'll do better than that. I'll show you some magic that isn't a trick.
Oh. Because it was kind of like a sort of a gender flipping the whole thing, and he'd sort of gender flipped Teela. And he was, so it says in the fan wiki that he's also shown us sort of having unrequited romantic feelings for She-Ra, which I don't think I ever picked up, but I think I was too busy going, oh my God, she's so pretty. and just thinking, I don't think it's that I want to be that pretty. I think I just want to give her a kiss.
Yeah.
So I wasn't really thinking about the boys at all in that show. I liked She-Ra because she was just like all like hair and shine, and she had the horse. And also I loved Shadow Weaver as well, because Shadow Weaver's got the boobs and she's got the mystery. You can't see her face and she sort of floats around all booby and mysterious. And I was like had some very funny thoughts about that as well.
I just love the way that when she holds aloft that magic sword and says to the honour of Grayskull, let's not pick apart to the power and to the honour across the franchise, because that will be deeply depressing. But I loved how her hair got bigger, her skirt got shorter, and her boobs got bigger.
Yeah, I don't know how to pick that apart. She sort of gets sort of more feminine. Have you seen the reboot at all?
You know, I haven't, and I keep thinking, should I? And then I think I'm gonna quote Heraclitus here, ancient Greek philosopher. And I don't, you know, you can't cross the same river twice. And it's It's like, it's wonderful that it exists, and it's wonderful that people have it, and they, you know, they, I know a lot about what they've tried to do in terms of it, making it much more queer and gender inclusive.
Yes.
But fundamentally, I don't think it's for me. I think it's I think it's for kids. And
I mean, I've watched the whole thing. I'm your age. and I really like it. Yes, it is made for kids, but I will. But I mean, I've got a podcast about cartoon characters. Yeah, I am not above watching children's content. I think a lot of it's much better and much more thoughtful than content that is made for adults. I mean, I think that She-Ra is much more thoughtful than, say, The Apprentice, which is just cunts doing things to impress another cunt. I'd rather watch some gays have magical adventures. And again, it's all about sort of resolving this, but through less sort of militarized means about coming to a form of understanding with people. Mm. So with that, the way I was going with it was the way that they redid She-Ra. So they again, they have Adora sort of turning into She-Ra, and again, the hair gets much bigger. But in this one, it's more that she gets buffer than she gets bigger boobs.
Yeah.
She becomes like really tall. She becomes like 7 feet tall and like not like He-Man buff, but like just sort of, a girl who works out kind of buff.
Powerful physique.
Yeah, powerful physique. But also, the reboot bow is adorable as well. Whereas I wasn't that fussed about the original bow. When I was watching it, I was all about reboot bow because he's just such a sweet. I talk a lot on this podcast about like my idea of what I call sort of positive masculinity, representations of a more nurturing, kinder masculinity than the kind that often gets portrayed to people. Bo is absolutely that. He's the mom friend. He's the heart of the show.
They're princesses. They have powers. I make baked goods.
I'm a master archer who's out of arrows. But that never stopped me either. You each have a skill that only you can do, even if it doesn't come from some magical jewel. You say you're just ordinary people. I say you're warriors of the rebellion.
And yet Glimbo was the one het ship I could absolutely get on board. Yeah. That show has so many ships. The ending, the finale is just like everybody making out. including some couples you'd never even thought of before, but they finally meet in people from different like areas of the adventure sort of meet each other in the finale and go, oh, hello. Right. Do you want to make out? Yes.
Wow. Okay. Maybe I will watch it then.
it is very, very sweet. I like it. And it does have like some nice references to the original series. Yeah. There's this one bit where Bo is trying to come up with like a plan to sort of break into the baddie's lair. And whenever he's sort of imagining their plan to do it, you see the picture in his mind and they're all dressed as the original characters for some reason, because that's just how he pictures them.
Oh, that crop top. I don't know. The whole moustache thing, I don't know whether that was kind of like projected onto me by my mother's deep passion for Tom Selleck as Magnum P.I.
I mean, he was hot.
The archetypal dad, Tom Selleck in Magnum P.I., right down to the Hawaiian shirt. Just open a button too low.
With the rug.
Be still my beating groin.
There's a lot of like flashes of torso in that sort of 80s masculinity, isn't there? It's either at the top or at the bottom. Not the whole torso, just a taste.
Just a flash, just something for the just something for the ladies. I don't know whether you've listened to it, but there's a really good film podcast called You Must Remember This. which is sort of a writer and film historian who looks at, you know, sort of various aspects of Hollywood, Hollywood's first century. She's just done a really interesting season on kind of like eroticism and sex in 1980s cinema.
All right.
And the way in which in the 1980s in particular, the kind of like the media was being reconfigured to meet a kind of an imagined female gaze.
Yeah.
So, like, the way in which, you know, male bodies would come to be kind of like idealized and eroticized in a way that, you know, women's bodies had been since time immemorial. So looking at it through the lens of, you know, Tom Selleck is a good example of what you would see on telly. But, you know, we've also got to think about Richard Gere, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Jean-Claude Van Spam, all of that. So kind of the idea of, you know, what a male body should look like was kind of like formed in the 1980s on the screen. And I think it was taken to a kind of a logical extreme in cartoons. Mm. And I have a theory that the reason why in kind of like superhero films, everybody has such absolutely totally unrealistic physiques comes down to the fact that these things are produced and directed by dudes who watched He-Man on the telly.
And I've talked about this on the podcast as well, because a lot of the time when I get on women who are interested in men, a lot of their choices aren't that. A lot of their choices are sort of like smaller, wirier, cannier, slightly softer male characters. So we get, we've had a lot of anthropomorphized animal characters. And I think
Robin Hood.
Robin Hood was the first one. We've had some chipmunks.
You are a heterosexual woman.
Yeah. And because he's like, he is wiry. And the interesting thing with foxes is that they're sort of partially sort of feminine coded, like cats, because they've got that sort of wiry, lithe sort of thing to them when they get anthropomorphized, and that is really attractive to women who are interested in men. And there's a kind of the flip side of the beefcake thing is that. Yeah. I think a lot of it may have been as much about sort of the male eye, even the male queer eye as such, but also sort of the male sort of heterosexual sort of fantasy of like being a big, buff, powerful man. I mean, obviously there is the queer gaze as well. That is more to do with the beefcake is sort of more to do with like guys looking back at themselves than maybe projecting an actual image that women are going to find actually sexually attractive. I don't know. Obviously, there are plenty of women who are into beefcake, and also you know, I'm a bi one. I like my ladies buff and my men like slightly feminist. So I don't know. Maybe that's just me.
I forget who it was. It was a gay bodybuilder talking about it. And he was talking about how there's kind of a slight horror among straight bodybuilders in sort of realizing, you know, once they reached a certain goal, that they kind of like optimized their bodies for the male gaze rather than the female gaze. I think that, I mean, a lot of it is, you know, we assume that, you know, we do a lot of a lot of the things that we do for ourselves aesthetically are, you know, there's the assumption that it's about the opposite sex, but often it's getting the approval of the people around of the kind of like the same gender, isn't it? So like, you know, most men don't really give a shit about makeup, do they?
This is the thing, people. That the argument about like women putting selfies online is that they're not thirst traps for men. They're often not thirst traps for men. They are often sort of almost sort of sexless thirst traps for women.
Yeah.
And it's more about sort of showing themselves off to other women and other women going, oh my God, you look so gorgeous. If I do occasionally post a selfie if I think I'm looking good, or if I'm like out for an evening, and I would No, it's lovely getting nice messages from men. It's really lovely getting nice messages from men, but I much prefer to get like a message from like a really pretty woman going, oh my God, you look lovely. Oh, thank you.
You're kind of looking for that bathroom, that kind of like bathroom in a bathroom and mirror and nightclub experience. Aren't you? Like, oh my God, you look amazing.
Oh my
I love that.
Yeah, it's just a form of bonding. It's just fun.
There's this thing of we want to be seen, don't we, as people. We don't necessarily want to be objectified. I mean, sometimes you do want to be objectified, but you kind of want to be seen and you want to be appreciated.
Yeah. Yes. We have really, we've gone down a really interesting segue here. Yeah. I like it. But we've gone very off track. I'm going to, don't mind me, I'm going to get us back on track.
I was thinking about this yesterday because I was kind of like watching an episode to remind myself of what the actual cartoon was like. Of the second choice, who is another, and he's quite a similar character to Bo.
Another mustachioed illusionist from the 80s.
Another mustachioed illusionist, yes. So I think there's something about this kind of like softer, sort of like more nurturing idea of, you know, projecting masculinity in cartoons that kind of goes across all three of my choices. So maybe we move on to number two now.
Yeah, I'm glad you managed to find some from the 80s as well, because a lot of the sort of the 80s, I mean, basically most cartoons from the 80s were to sell toys. So they didn't think, I don't think they thought that hard about what they are, what they're presenting us with. No. But they did, there are some nice like little picks in there. And sort of if you sort of root hard enough, you can find the sort of more softer, more nurturing examples of like male heroes. So let's crack on with choice two. So your second choice is, as we just said, another mustachioed illusionist from the 80s, from the superhero team-up series that was possibly ahead of its time, because I, for one, would definitely be interested in an adventure series about a league of middle-aged superhero single dads in the year of our Lord 2023. Master of magic, spells and illusion, enemies crumble in fear and confusion. It's Mandrake the Magician from Defenders of the Earth. Defenders. So yeah, I remember this a lot. It is a completely, so this is from I did write down who'd done it. But it's not DC or Marvel. Oh, it's King Features Syndicate.
Yeah, it's very much the Wizard and Chips of
much the Wizard and Chips. But if you are listening,
comics world.
It is still going. It's still going, King Features Syndicate. Right.
Is it?
If you are listening, apparently, well, I looked it up. Apparently, they are still going. Okay. So I reckon there is definitely a market for a superhero team-up adventure series or film about a bunch of middle-aged superhero single dads.
Great, but also, can we just have less superheroes, thanks?
Yeah, I mean,
I'm full up. I'm kind of,
Yes to that, but also I know what I like.
Yeah.
The heart wants what the heart wants. I don't remember that much about this one. I found out that I knew that it had a really good theme tune, which I looked up when I was doing it. I remember, again, that's what that was moment. I fancy Phantom's daughter, Jeddah. Mm. And I remember that there was one episode where one of the kids got addicted to drugs. But that's about all I remember of this.
There was always the Nancy Reagan episode, wasn't there?
Yes.
In those cartoons. So Defenders of the Earth. Right, I was looking it up yesterday. Ran for two seasons. There are 65 episodes of it. Apparently, it's not very good. Let's be real about it. It's not like top draw animated cartoon.
It's Wizard and Chips.
It's IP rather than art. if we wanted to put it that way. However, I did love it when I was 8. And the again, thinking about, we're talking about kind of like formative cartoon crushes, I did crush very hard on Mandrake for similar reasons to the how I reason I crushed on Bo, because he was not the kind of like go out and sort of like shoot everything kind of superhero. He was a bit thoughtful, he was a bit cerebral, he kind of like projected himself as being kind of like wise, kind, you know. I think the kind of like, if I, there's the common thread by the stuff that I really responded to in some like art and entertainment when I was a child. And I was always drawn to, droids. So no surprise that I went on to write books that were mainly about robots. So like formative, you know, C-3PO, I love C-3PO, love me a camp robot. But also people like characters like Obi-Wan Kenobi rather than Luke Skywalker. For example, I kind of thought the people who are thoughtful and the people who are intelligent in those kind of like movies and TV series were what drew me towards them. So I think that was why I liked Mandrake, because he was kind of, again, he offered kind of a mode of sort of heroism. And you know, being, you know, that heroism and being a super person that felt more kind of like sympathetic, sympathetic with me. He was also really stacked. He's got a great rack, so again, there's a commonality there. He was really filling out that dress shirt. Ooh, I hadn't been stinking on his bench presses. The thing I thought when I was watching it again, which, although it is a bit shit, which is really quite nice, is that the single dad's thing, that idea of it really embeds the idea of the multi-generational thing. I think the things like the Marvel Comics universe are only just coming around to that now. And particularly in the films, the comic books I don't know an awful lot about. Please don't shout at me about those in the mentions, people. But in the Marvel Comics universe, we're only just kind of getting into that sort of getting into that aspect there. And all that was there from the beginning, which I thought was really interesting, because it kind of rounds out, you know, Flash Gordon, Mandrake, the Phantom's people, doesn't it? It's not that I'm here to save the world, but you know, there's, you know, I've got people at home that I care about, and I have relationships.
Here to save the world and help my kid with his homework.
And I think it's quite nice to have a superhero who isn't a broken person. Especially with the DC Comics universe, it's like everybody is really fucking broken, aren't they?
Everyone's so grimdark.
Yeah, and you know, to see somebody who has remarkable abilities have like a functional family relationship. Who knew?
Yeah.
It doesn't have any mothers in it.
No. Well, that would involve having more than one woman in the show.
Yeah. Why is the Phantom white? That is another one that sprang
in. That's so fucking weird. It's like a whole thing. I was reading up about it because the Phantom's the only one from that sort of, from the King Feature Syndicate who's ever had a film with the Phantom with Billy Zane in 1996, again, before its time, like before people gave a shit about superhero films. Yeah. It's a whole thing. I like that it's a legacy superhero. Yeah. So it's like, it's a legacy superhero that goes back to the 16th century. But it's a legacy of white men who go to sub-Saharan Africa and are literally have a white hero complex.
Any ideas to our destination?
Beats me. I haven't seen a street sign yet.
Halt! The Bandar natives are my friends. Who are you, and what do you want?
These gentlemen of Flash, Gotten, and Lothar are my friends, and I'm Mandrake. We're looking for the ghost who walks.
The man you are seeking is my father, the Phantom.
Yes, I will join you in your fight against this Ming. I'm always ready to battle pirates from wherever they come, but I am concerned about the welfare of my daughter, Jedha.
I understand your concern, Phantom. If you come with us, Jedha, you can attend school in Central City.
Our sons, Rick and LJ, will already be there.
At least they didn't give him an Afrikaner accent. Let's be grateful.
Yeah, it's very strange. And yeah, the sort of whole sort of thing in his intro, he's like the brother. It's like yeah. just this white guy going, hello.
And then watching Ming the Merc, because in the series, if you really want to go and watch it, it's on YouTube. The main villain is Ming the Merciless, who you might remember from Flash Gordon. And oof.
Is it a little bit orientalist?
A little bit. you might as well just have Yellow Peril. It's like big letters across the back of the screen at all times. That's a bit gross, actually.
Yeah.
And maybe that's why Flash Gordon hasn't come back, because Ming the Merciless is just too problematic a property.
Yeah, I mean, you guys, is an alien, for God's sake. Can you make, I mean, yeah, you say, can you make your aliens less racist? I just remembered Star Wars.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose it's a really interesting historical artifact because, you know, Flash Gordon, kind of the creation of the 1920s and the 1930s, when there was a lot of, I was going to say cultural anxiety, a lot of racism, particularly in the US, about China.
So, yeah, I mean, also sort of the, you know, pre-World War II, it would have been a lot of racism and terror about Japan as well, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but watching it yesterday, I was kind of like struck by, oh yes, there's a lot of elements here which, although, you know, looking at them now, we go, ooh, really not that way. It feels quite progressive in a way.
Yeah.
So it's like the superheroes, they're rounded people, they're not broken people, they have, you know, people that they love, people that they care for, they operate as, you know, an extended kind of like glued together, kind of an extended sort of glued together blended family.
Yeah, and it does have sort of positive representation of like black fatherhood in it.
Yeah.
So they're trying, and also with Mandrake, he's the one adoptive dad.
Yes, he is.
If we're talking about tropes that I love, a single man who has found a scrappy orphan in the street and has gone, well, looks like I'm a dad now. That's one of my absolute favourite tropes. I love that. Apparently, Mandrake was based off a real guy.
I read that as well. And then became a cartoon strip that ran for best part of 100 years and only finished in 2013. Honestly, the things that happen in American newspapers and you never knew.
Yeah, it's so strange. Yeah, because the guy who it was based on just really leaned into it. He was like, "Yeah, fair enough. This is actually incredibly good PR. There's a comic strip where I'm basically a hero." And so yeah, he changed his name to Mandrake and just really leaned into it. And apparently, it went quite well for him. So fair enough.
I mean, it would be really cool to be a strip cartoon. It's actually just also occurred to me that all three of the characters that I've sort of picked for this crush episode are in some way, shape or form magicians, and I just want to put it out here that I do not have a crush on magicians in real life. I find them deeply, deeply suspect people.
But they're actual, I mean, the people who you've crushed on do actual magic in some sort of way. I think there's a difference between like magicians like who are like sleight of hand artists in the real world and the fantasy idea of what magician is, which is an actual magic man.
I just want to make it clear in case, you know, any slight
in case any magicians are listening.
I didn't slide into my DMs. I will give you no quote. I live in Stoke Newington in London, which is, you know, a parody in itself. But just before the pandemic, a close magic cafe opened up on the high street.
Of course it did.
I'm quailing when I saw the sign go up. Close Magic Cafe. Happily, didn't survive the pandemic.
Yay.
Because who You couldn't social distance while doing someone a card trick. So thanks. Sorry your business failed, but also no.
But also no, that would be too ridiculous. Well, let's move on to your third magician then.
Yeah.
So choice three is a little bit of a curveball, and that's A-OK with me. That's what this podcast is for. He's a kind and friendly gentleman who dicks about inventing things to make the world a better place and is surrounded by talking animals like some sort of Disney princess. He travels by pogo stick and wooden space rockets, the big hipster. He's voiced by Peter Ustinov. He's Dr. Snuggles. I have forgotten all about this.
I
looked up the video and it did bring back the vaguest of memories. I think there's a slight chance that it was like Teddy Ruxpin in that it was supposed to be cozy, but I was fucking terrified of it. Because there's a certain aesthetic from the 80s where they're trying to do cozy, but it goes too far for me. It certainly went too far for like little me, and I started going, this is, I don't like this. But tell me all about it.
No, Teddy Ruxpin's interesting because you're right, they were going for cute, but somehow they managed to mine this extremely deep vein of melancholy.
Yes.
Which was incredibly off-putting.
Yes, it was.
So we had my little brother had a Teddy Ruxpin, and we used to put the kind of the story time tapes in the Teddy Ruxpin to play.
Yes.
In the hope that magically its lips would move, and it never did. So you'd have this like stone-faced teddy bear. Reading a story. I don't think we ever got any more than the first introductory tape for Teddy Ruxpin. So that was a really bad investment.
I've forgotten that you got the teddy and you put the tape in the teddy and it told a story.
Yeah, and it kind of like wanged on at you. It was a terrible toy.
Hi, my name is Teddy Ruxpin. I want you to meet my friend.
Teddy Ruxpin's friends are found only in the world of Teddy Ruxpin's storybook cassettes. I said in the storybook cassettes.
If you grew up in the 1980s, you didn't really watch cartoons, you watched toy advertisements, didn't you?
Yeah.
And thankfully, I think it's a... is it better now? Is it different
now? It's much better now. Kids' TV now is fucking amazing. I say that as somebody who works in kids' TV quite often, but it's really good. I mean, some of the cartoons that are coming out now are absolutely amazing. I mean, some of it's still dross, but some of them are really good.
Yeah, I think it's a lot better integrated, and people know how to, you know, there's a more blurred line between what we might call entertainment and IP, isn't there? Lot smarter about how to exploit it. What did I like about Dr. Snuggles? Dr. Snuggles is a really big warm hug of a cartoon. There is no conflict. There is no, there's no real jeopardy. It's just really sweet. It's all about a cozy old man who invents a time machine and a spaceship, and he has all of these bumbling adventures and he helps people. So it's just really, 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 really cute. It's like Ovaltine. That again, like thinking about cartoon crushes, like who, you know, what is the kind of man that I like? What is the kind of man that I would be? It's like I hope this is like coming across quite clearly in all of my choices. Like bad
boys, kind magician,
not for me. But it's, are you a bit of a bastard? That's fine. Yeah. I'm sure there are people out there who really like you, but not me. Thank you very much. I did like the kind of like slightly weird aesthetic of it. So I was looking it up, and apparently it was a Japanese animator, which makes
it's Japanese. It was Japanese, American, British, Dutch, apparently.
Not that.
The production team were British, Dutch, and the animation was done in Japan and America. There's quite a few cartoons like that in the 80s. So we've had, we talked earlier in this series about D'Artagnan and Ulysses, and both of those were Japanese European collaborations. There were, in the 80s, there were quite a few sort of international collaborations when it came to animations, where they people from all over the world would just sort of get together and just go, let's make a weird cartoon.
Would that have included the Seven Cities of Gold?
Yes, I think that was.
I love the Seven
Cities of Gold.
Not really anybody crushworthy in there, so that didn't, you know. Maybe Esteban's dad, but I have very, 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 very distant memories of that. Love the Seven Cities of Gold. Dog Tanyan, actually on my short list for cartoon crushes, was Milady. Yeah.
Oh, yes. I was on board with that one. With Lady and Aramis, the one with the big ears, the spaniel one.
Him.
Who's slightly more sort of sensitive. I just looked it up, and yes, Mysterious Cities of Gold was a Japanese-French?
Was it? Yeah. I mean, that makes sense with the aesthetics. For listeners, Seven Cities of Gold was a short-lived, it never finished properly, cartoon about a Spanish boy, an Incan princess, and was he an Olmec? Or, I can't remember.
I don't know,
Going in search of the famed city of El Dorado, the city of gold, in like late 16th century, early 17th century South America at the time when the conquistadors were basically ripping the continent apart. So very interesting decolonialization narrative there, avant la lettre. I loved it. Had really lovely kind of sort of Japanese, South American aesthetic to it. Great theme. A lot of these cartoons had great theme tunes. Shame about the cartoon. and Dog Tanyan and the Musker Hounds, the kind of the great adversary. Cardinal Richelieu, played by Fox, hot. His kind of like henchwoman, a spy, Milady de Winter, played by a cat. And she was great. Loved her.
Oh, I love Milady.
Loved her. She was fierce.
I always think about the time that the last time we see her, because I'm sure I think I watched it through to the end, Dog Tanyan. The last time we see her, where she's chased off and she starts running like a cat, like her dress comes off, she stops being anthropomorphized. It's really strange. I think about that a lot. She's being chased and her dress comes off, and then she gets on all fours and she like becomes a normal cat running away from dogs. It's really strange.
Ooh.
And I think about it loads.
Oh, no, I never saw that. But that had a really annoying theme tune.
I love the theme tune.
Do you?
It's got a key change in everything.
It's getting, that is a disgusting earworm. I'm not here for
it. It really is an earworm. There were some really top-notch theme tunes in the 80s. I mean, Gummy Bears is another great one. Again, that's got a key change. That's got a bridge.
The theme tune for Gummy Bears was by far and away the best thing in the show. The first episode of Gummy Bears, I think I watched the first time I went to the cinema, which was to see Pinocchio.
Right.
And they re-released that, I think, I want to say in about 1985, 1986.
Yeah.
And we're going to the cinema to see Pinocchio. Jesus Christ, that film's depressing.
Have you seen the new one?
I watched 10 minutes of it over Christmas and thought I would come back to it because it wasn't the best place to watch that film in my dad's house, where he doesn't keep where he refuses to turn the telly up to the point where you would hear it. The dog's barking. this isn't an optimized viewing experience for me.
It is really good, but it's more depressing than the Disney one.
It's a really depressing though.
It is.
I remember reading the book and going, what the hell am I reading here?
Yeah. I mean, with the Del Toro one, because it's Del Toro, it's what if magical realism, but also fascism? So he brings in the fascist element as he is wont to do, and it makes it even more depressing.
Yay. Love that. Yeah. Whereas Dr. Snuggles, to go back,
no fascism at all.
It's completely the opposite. It's like it's a really kind of like no jeopardy, no nothing. It's just very, very gentle, pleasant viewing. Imagine Last of the Summer Wine, but somebody made it into a cartoon and it wasn't really annoying and didn't contain Thora. I mean, it does contain a Thora Heard character, actually.
It's got an amazing voice cast.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It had been raining all day, so I spent the time sorting my collection of precious stones and examining them through my junkoscope. Opals from Australia, emeralds from Brazil, garnets, amethysts, rubies. Each bag had meant a different adventure.
I looked it up. It's only had 13 episodes, but two of the episodes were written by Douglas Adams and John Lloyd.
Oh my God. My taste, wow, Jesus.
Yeah. So it's like the sort of hidden gem. It's got Peter Ustinov. It's got the guy who played Boise in Only Fools and Horses in it, John Challis. Yeah. It's an odd thing that I barely remembered it, but it's got all these amazing names who worked on it. It's so strange. Yeah.
I just remember it being one of those things. It wasn't really on the telly, but you could kind of like buy videotapes of it for like $2.99 or $3.99 from petrol stations in supermarkets.
Yes, from Woolies.
Yeah. It's next to the knockoff versions of, you know, Sleeping Beauty or Beauty and the Beast. They've basically been animated on the back of, like, animated using a single drawing book somewhere.
Yeah. It's very utopian, isn't it? Like all of the problems can be solved with science and with just like having a think about it and having a kind man come up with an idea and an invention and then it's all fine. That's a very sort of utopian 80s sort of way of thinking about things, I suppose.
A vision of what technology could accomplish if only shits like Elon Musk didn't have, you know.
Veil's sort of fallen from our eyes now. The problem with technology is that it's run by psychopaths. Love that for humanity and all the other animals trapped on this burning planet with us.
We're all monkeys living in the same dying tree. That's what I say.
Fun. So on that high note, I will end with one last question, which is that if you could bring any one of these characters into the real world and make them flesh and blood, who would you choose and would you try to romantically pursue them in real life?
So I'm a great believer in not necessarily needing to sort of like meet and romance your crushes. So I think it's like some things are best left in the kind of realm of like expectation or the realm of anticipation. So I have no doubt that if Bo were to come to life, Bo probably wouldn't be interested in me. Mm-hmm. And if Mandrake were to come to life, I'd realise he was a magician and be deeply suspect. it's like, no, you do card tricks. Oh, the scales have fallen from my eyes. And just thinking about what we talked about just now, I'd probably bring Dr. Snuggles to life. I wouldn't want him to be my boyfriend, but I would want him to kind of like offer a model for how we might sort of do science and technology better than we're managing at the moment. And keep
that is a brilliant idea. I'm very, very on board with bringing Dr. Snuggles like the anti-Elon Musk.
Yeah.
Like somebody who can, A, actually knows technology and is good at it, and B, is not just a hard right psycho. Not a massively shit person. Yes, brilliant. Anything that you'd like to give a shout out about?
All three of my Battlestar Suburbia books are out there in the world, as you said at the beginning of the podcast episode. Mm-hmm. They begin with the book Battlestar Suburbia, which is about What happens when people strike? Feels quite timely.
Oh. yeah, very dramatic.
How, you know, sort of things like collective action among people who are fed up with the way that things are can translate into change. So support your local strikers. And if you've got any spare money, buy one of my books. Thanks.
Hey, or get some. I've just found out how much money we get if somebody borrows one of our books from the library. It's probably more than we get if someone buys one of our books. So
I cannot open the PLR statement because the last PLR statement I opened it said, nothing. I thought that was
nothing. Yeah, I was the same. I didn't meet the threshold, but we get 30p per borrow now. So
there is just something so peculiarly crushing. Hopefully, <your statement. laughs>
yeah, see, I like ALCS Day. Are you in ALCS?
I'm not.
Oh, join that. Because then you get the weirdest little amounts for little things, and it's really good fun. Sort of, I get like ALCS Day, and I'll get like 2p for something that I wrote a decade ago being broadcast in Bulgaria. I love that.
Amazing, yeah.
So, yeah, get Chris's books from buying it or from the library and join a union and strike. That's the message we're taking home. That's our call to action.
Strike.
Strike. Brilliant. Thank you ever so much.
Okay. Thank you very much as well. Thanks for having me.
Huge thanks to Chris McCrudden. For more credits and details, see @curiously_drawn on Twitter.